This audio interview with Catherine Bennett was recorded on 21st September 2018 in Cowra by Nikkei Australia's Mayu Kanamori and Masako Fukui. This interview was recorded for the Cowra Voices geolocative storytelling app, created in 2019 and launched to coincide with the 75th anniversary of the Cowra breakout. For more information, please refer to the overview in this archive.
Hello, I'm Catherine Bennett. I'm a potter by trade and have worked for many years in pottery and art and craft teaching and making. And more recently, my son and I are running a section of the family farm and we have sheep and are growing lamb for meat. I went to Japan in 1971 as an exchange student to Echijo High School in Nara. I was 17. It was a private exchange organised by the then mayor of Kara when the school showed an interest in having a student. While I was there, I was at school, of course, but then showed an interest in learning to do pottery. I had done a little bit of pottery here. But was keen to learn more, so the teachers were able to arrange for me to work in a very traditional tea ceremony workshop near Nara called Akahada Yama with a family called Oishio. Old Mr. Oishio had recently retired and his son was running the business with a number of apprentices and workers. So Mr. Oishio was able to sit beside me on the wheel, and although he had only a little bit of English and I had only a little bit of Japanese, I was able to learn by following his hand movements on the wheel, and it was a fantastic way of learning. So I was able to learn to throw. Then later on, and I used to go there a couple of days a week with one of my teachers on the back of his motorbike. He would take me and then stay while I did a number of hours there. Later on, it was arranged that I could go to one of their students, a Mr. Hagiwara, who had a studio closer into Nara. And I used to go there every day and learnt to throw really quite well, got involved in glazing, saw how things were fired. And it really set me up for my future life because pottery has been my career. The reason I wanted to go to Japan was that my grandmother went to Japan in 1911. She was 25 and went with an uncle and aunts and cousins in a big trip by ship, of course, in those years. And we have her diary and lovely black and white photos of that time, and also some of the beautiful craft work, including pottery, that they brought back from Japan. So that was my sort of inspiration as a child. We used to look at these beautiful exotic things and thought how nice, and I thought then it'd be lovely to learn to do pottery. My grandmother was Elsie Stokes, and she married Harold Busby, so her married name was Busby. They were farmers on a farm neighbouring ours, and her family came here very early. In fact, they were the first European people into this valley in 1831, so we're still on that land. So we do have a very sort of strong sense of place and a long history of diaries and station records and early photos of our lives here. So that was a great inspiration when we were children as well. So we sort of knew about their early lives in quite a lot of detail, in particularly that trip to Japan.
Why did your grandmother go to Japan? She must have been the first person from Kara to go to Japan.
Absolutely, she would have been. Yes, so my grandmother Elsie Busby would have been one of the first people in Kara, I think probably the first person to go to Japan. Travelling then was so much harder. Her uncle was the first skilled doctor in Kara, a man called Dr. Felix Bartlett, and he was a great traveller. He came from Devon in England and came out, married a great-great-aunt of mine and had two children here. And he took his children and Elsie, his niece and an older aunt and his wife to Japan as an adventure and a trip. In fact, it was a sort of a tour around the world that they did. They went to England first, back to where he was from, and then across Canada, across the Atlantic by ship, and then across Canada on an early railway line, and then by ship down to Japan. Then they went into Hong Kong. The women stayed there and the men went into China. And it was very soon after the Boxer Rebellion, so things weren't so good in China. So it was in my grandmother's diary, she describes the difference between what she felt was happy, contented Japan and unhappy, rebellious China at the time. She had the most marvellous photos of their travelling on horseback and in a sedan chair. They went to Nikko and into the mountains and walked there, photos of them walking up into forests with big trees, then to Lake Biwa, where they went on a punt or a boat. And there are photos of them at the stages where tea could be had. So they were sitting on platforms with a cloth and having tea as they travelled. It's fascinating. Mm. Then they went down into Kyoto and Nara. So there are photos of them going to temples and shrines in Nara, which I then went to in 1971. So I was able to recognise the same stone lanterns and entrances to the temples and shrines there. It's fantastic.
Wow. Any questions along there?
Well, probably too many, but I think that's another story for another time. I think we have to get first.
Can you tell us, you went to Japan and you've learned, opened up a path to pottery, and then can you let us know what happened later?
Yeah. So after I was in Japan for a year, I came back and finished my schooling, just a couple of years at Akara High School, and then went to East Sydney Technical College, which was a fantastic place to learn ceramics in Sydney, under Peter Rushforth, a well-known Australian potter who had been a prisoner of war in Japan. And he had taken a great interest in Japan after the war. Having had a hard time, he then decided that he would go back to Japan and come to terms with what had happened during the war, and again took a great interest in pottery, was absolutely amazed by their pottery traditions, and came back and spent his life teaching and potting, and made beautiful ceramics, which are very well known in Australia.
Was he a Caliban?
No, he was from Sydney, Melbourne and then Sydney, So he was the head of ceramics there, did that, then went on to England and worked with a potter, Alan Cager Smith, who was a very, very good brush worker and did beautiful tin-glazed earthenware and lustreware, and worked as an apprentice in his workshop for 3 years, and that was the most wonderful experience as well. Came back to Kara, set up a small pottery on our farm where I was brought up. When I came back to Kara, Mr. Saburo Nagakura visited the Kara Japanese garden and thought it would be nice to have something slightly more active going on in the garden, as well as the sort of more passive walking around looking at the garden. He was head of the Kyushu Electric Power Company and was based in Arita, which of course is a famous porcelain centre in Kyushu, the southern island of Japan. And he said, what about setting up a pottery? So the garden got in touch with me knowing that I was a potter and said, would I be able to help with a design for the building and then run it? So I worked with John Favre, an architect based at the ANU in, not the ANU, I think it was the Canberra University in Canberra. We worked out a floor plan, and the building was built. And it was Mr. Nagakura who financed that.
It's not there now, though, is it?
It was run for, I'd say, 15 or 20 years as a pottery. I worked it for about 10 years. And then a group of women in Kara took it on. And that there was a sort of changing population in that group. Then finally it was decided that it would be made into a small conference centre, which it is now.
Do you know the relationship between the park, the Saburo Nagakura Park, and mm-hmm. how that came about with the Japanese gardens, which is, we don't have much stuff on the...
No, I think what happened was Mr. Nagakura took a great interest in Kara, and because of the pottery connection, by then there were other potters working in the Kara area. There's some very good clays nearby which are suitable for pottery making. And because he had a wonderful personal collection of ceramics, as well as building on the Kyushu Electric Power Company's ceramic collection, he felt that he would like to do more for Kara. So he offered to finance the Saburo Nagakura Park, which is now in one of the most beautiful positions in Kara, overlooking the town, looking to the south. And it's much used. I notice people go up there a lot. There are barbecue facilities and a playground and an area where you can play games, you know, lovely garden and a lawn, and people seem to use it a lot.
Have you spent much time there yourself?
Yes.
Can you tell us specifically what you've done there?
Not long ago, an extended family, because I'm from a big farming family with lots of nieces and nephews and brothers and sisters, we decided to celebrate a family birthday at Saburo Nagakura Park in Kara. And we ordered pizzas and took them up and ate them in the picnic area, and the family played cricket on the lawn.
Yeah, your mother was mayor?
Yes.
Had relationships with Japan?
Actually, fascinating ones, I think. And that might go into the POW camp thing. So, my mother, the daughter of Elsie Busby, who went to Japan in 1911, was a farmer's wife, and with my father ran a very busy farm, did lots of books, raised four children, and then felt that she would like to contribute to the Kara community, and became, along with another woman friend, the first female councillors on the municipal council, or aldermen, I think we should call them. Shall I start again? So she was an alderman for more than 20 years, and during those 20 years she was mayor, the first and only so far female mayor of Kara, for 4 years, from the late 70s till the early 80s. Mm-hmm. In 1980 she went to Japan as mayor and did an official trip, and was able to meet many of the businessmen who were financing the building of the Japanese garden, and helped, was on a committee, on the original garden committee that was working out how to establish a garden. So she was very instrumental in those early planning years.
You didn't mention her name.
Yes. My mother, Barbara Bennett, the daughter of Elsie Busby, who went to Japan in 1911. Was a councillor and was mayor of Kara from the late 70s to the early 80s.
So did that kind of influence you in any way?
I think in my mother's family, and my father's really, there's a very strong sense of duty to work for your community. Mum and Dad were great employees of people, because we had a big asparagus enterprise here, and lots of people would come and work on the farm at certain times of the year. That extended into my mother's community activities as an alderman. One of the things that she enjoyed most in those years was getting to know some of the old prisoners of war who were in the Japanese prisoner of war camp in Kara during the war, and they formed a Kara Camp Association, it was called, and these lovely little old men who were elderly then would come to Kara quite often, visit the cemeteries and pay their respects, and got to know the activities around Kara. And one of Mum's great pleasures was meeting those elderly men, and she kept up correspondence with them for years. Of course, my mother is no longer alive, and they probably aren't either, but the three names that I remember was Mr. Motai and Mr. Kaneda and Mr. Fukushima, who I actually met when I went back to Japan years later. They were the most delightful men. They were jovial and funny, and they had sometimes quite surprising memories of the camp. One that I do remember is that they were absolutely amazed at the view to the east, which is a really beautiful view from the camp, and they said they had no recollection of that. So coming back, they thought, gosh, you know, we were in this position and we didn't realise that it was there. They also talked about the food. They were amazed at the quality of the food. It was very good, and they were well fed and cared for. They said they found oatmeal porridge, which was fairly common on the diet, on the menu, a little bit hard to eat. And the other thing that they thought was very funny was milky sweet rice pudding, because rice, of course, was probably generally savoury in their own country. And they thought that was an odd thing, and it was something that they did remember.
Isn't it?
It's often those minor things, isn't it? You know, funny little things like the bathing arrangements or the food.
Did you have anything else that you'd written there?
About my mother. I'll just read.
Oh, of course, you've written so much. Not necessarily about your mum, but about your experiences with the Japanese in here. So you spent time in Japan as a young woman or as a teenager. What's it like coming back to Kara, seeing tourists? Like, there's a huge Japanese inflow.
Both ways, I guess. There are lots of other people, tourists going to Japan as well. Yeah. One thing that I could talk about is I was at the garden when the Pottery House was first built. It was right at the time when there was a big second development at the Japanese garden, the Lower Lake, in front of the Pottery House was being constructed. And so Mr. Ken Nakajima and his son, the designers and makers of the Japanese garden, were working in the garden while I was working at the pottery. So the Pottery House became quite a centre for workmen, which was fun. And I do remember that Mr. Nakajima, who was elderly then, small, jovial man, and he always wore white gloves. And at one day, two very big, burly Kara tradesmen appeared with a crane and a front-end loader to move a few rocks around. I should explain that Mr. Nakajima was the most amazing gardener. He had such skills. I think probably most of all, his skills with placing rocks was quite amazing. He chose rocks from various locations in and around or around Kara just by going out onto farms and finding the rocks that he might be able to do something with. So it was a giant pile of rocks, and these fellows came up with their big machines to move a few around. And I think they had no idea that it was going to be a long job and very, very carefully planned. So at first they were being fairly rough with the rocks, rolling them here and there, and Mr. Nakajima in his white gloves was very carefully training them to place them within centimetres. I looked at these two fellows and thought, you know, they were rolling their eyes and thinking, what's all this about? By the end of the day, the three heads were down, looking at a rock, carefully measuring, and they were all absolutely engrossed in this job, Mr. Nakajima and the two Australian tradesmen. So they did the most beautiful job. When the water was turned on, all that laying of rocks was done dry, and then the big day was to turn the water on and see how it worked. And Mr. Nakajima only had to move perhaps two or three rocks a few centimetres here and there, and it was perfect. So he really did have tremendous experience with rock work and gardening. One of the times when he was here before that second development, in the first development, my mother was very involved in the garden, and I possibly, with the stress of establishing it initially, Mr. Nakajima had a bad case of shingles. And so he had to go to hospital, and they worked out what was wrong. And then it was arranged that he would stay in the hospital and be cared for as needed. And then each day he would set off, walk over the hill, and to the Japanese garden and do the work. So for the whole of that time, he was based at the hospital, which was lovely. He became well again.
Okay, great, fantastic. That's such a good story.
And then there's another story about him, which I was there for. There were a group of local Kara businessmen and some Japanese businessmen being shown around the Japanese garden, possibly with the idea of working out, you know, the finances of it. And Mr. Nakajima was talking in Japanese, and although I don't speak much Japanese, I understand enough to understand some conversations. And I realised that he was telling the most marvellous story of building concurrently with the Japanese garden in Kara a smaller Japanese garden in the Moscow Botanical Gardens. And so he was travelling between Australia and Russia. It was the USSR in those days, building the garden, and he was talking about that. He went to the garden and found that there were no rocks around Moscow. It's on a plain. And so said to the people at the university the university students in Moscow were helping him with the arrangements, and said, "I need some rocks." So a train was arranged, and the students and their teachers were sent out to the Urals, where there were first rocks, to collect a trainload of rocks. Came back, Mr. Nakajima got in one end of the train and walked through the train, came out the other end shaking his head and said, "No, these are no good. They're all round, marui," he said. And is that the word for round? And so the students and the train had to go further to find the right size rocks.
But in Kara, they found the right
rocks. In Kara, they found the right rocks. I think mainly a combination of the granite, which is around the Kara area, and limestone rocks from the Walai region, which had lovely water marks on them. So
the rocks are very special.
Right? They're very special rocks. And Mr. Nakajima chose that site because of the beautiful big granite. It's granite diorite, actually, which has garnets in it sometimes, the rocks in the Japanese garden and on the hill. And he chose that particular site because of two particular rocks, a big flat rock and then a pointed rock, which he felt were sentinels that would be the centre of the garden. He was given a choice of three sites, and my mother was involved in that. That site, which is west-facing and rocky and poor soil, and then two sites down in the town, close to the river, one in the, I think it's called the River Park, and I think the alderman felt that he would probably choose one of those two sites, but he chose, to their consternation, he chose the site that it is on now, and they thought, how are we ever going to make a garden there? It was rocky and dry and poor soil. But thank goodness he chose that site, because it's absolutely beautiful now.
That's amazing. I didn't know that story. Did you know that story?
A lot of people think that the pointed rock is the sort of god rock or the Shinto rock. It's actually a big flat rock, and then the pointed rock is adjacent. And he felt that it was the big flat rock which might be the main rock in the garden. The other thing that somebody in those early days, the committee thought that he would have to clear the whole site because none of the native vegetation, the eucalypts and bushes, would be suitable for a Japanese garden. And he said, no, the eucalypts are like giant bonsai. They're the most marvellously contorted shapes, and that he was very keen to use both exotic species and the native species, and he did that very well.
I know, that giant bonsai, that's great, isn't it?
there's one big, I think it's a grey gum at the top of the main lawn, and he thought that that was a particularly beautiful tree. Mm. Yes, one thing, has anybody talked about the rocks in front of, you know, those carved rocks in front of the Japanese garden?
No one's talked about it.
Right. Well, the man who did those came to, while I was working at the garden, soon after Mr. Nakajima was there for that second construction, a New York-based sculptor came to Kara and offered to make a sculpture in front of the Japanese garden. Most of the councillors weren't interested, but fortunately, Mr. Cyril Treasure, who was, I think, maybe the deputy mayor at the time, I'm not quite sure what his position was, took an interest in him. He was a bohemian Japanese New Yorker, and said that would be wonderful, and arranged for him to have accommodation at one of the motels in Kara. And he spent a number of weeks making a sculpture out of, I think it's 13 granite rocks. They're fairly rounded. He chose them. Mr. Treasure helped him collect those and place them in a line in front of the car park at the Japanese garden. And he used a tungsten tip tool and a hammer and made the most amazing curving line joining the rocks together. So it's quite a symbolic piece, and there's a story about it beside the sculpture. And because he was up there in blazing heat, I think he must have been here in the middle of summer, he used to come into the pottery and we'd have lunch together and make tea and get his energy back again and then go back to sculpting this beautiful thing. It took a number of weeks. Granite is a very hard material to work with, and so it was slow work but beautifully done. More recently, our connection with Japan has been with Farmer's Days. Some years ago, one of the fathers of one of the early exchange students at Kara High School, who were part of the Seikei Kara exchange system, Mr. Horobe, bought land here and built a restaurant and a guest house in Japanese style. And he arranged for often university students, school students, young adults to come and be based in Kara for some weeks or some months. And sometimes he would arrange for them to come and stay on farms. And we had many of those students. They would come for a week or 3 months, sometimes studying here, working on the farm. But we had for some years, we had quite a strong connection with Shimabara Agricultural High School in Kyushu. And each year in August, a number of students would come with a teacher and work on the farm for a week. They would help with sheep work, but they also did a lot of planting of trees, and we now have many established trees, an avenue that you would have driven through on your way here, of trees that were planted by the Shimabara students. And it did the most wonderful job of rehabilitating and regenerating native trees and shrubs on this farm. So I'm always grateful to the work that they did.
There are women from Shimabara buried in the Kara Japanese War Cemetery.
Really?
Yeah. I'll email you later and let you know which
really?
Ones they are.
Yeah. And were they internees?
They were internees.
Really? So they'd been living in in Australia before the war, yes, and were interned. Quite a number of the students who came from Shimabara were girls, mm-hmm, as well, and they were doing various studies, you know, animal studies, vegetable studies. So, interesting. And I've got their names written down, so we'll see if there's a connection.
Isn't that strange? Mm. Not strange, but interesting.
It's an interesting coincidental connection.
Yes, yes. One thing that I do know about a little bit was, because it's so topical now, is, and this has nothing to do with your app at all, I think, but, yes, my mother, before she became alderman, was always sort of very involved in the community and was worried about the Aboriginal situation here. Kara had a mission where there were a lot of the Aboriginal families were expected to live there, and she realised that the children, initially there was a school on the mission, then there was a change in official policy and the children were supposed to come to mainstream schools, and so those children were having to walk across from the mission, which was quite a way, across the river over a bridge to school. So their coming to school was in many ways very difficult. They didn't have the finances to have uniforms and probably not quite enough food sometimes. And they'd had no early preparation with preschools to come to the school. So it was a bad time when there were changes to the policy of dealing with Indigenous people in Kara, in Australia, happening all the time, and you know, it was all pretty terrible, really. And my mother realised that some of these children were having to come to school with absolutely no understanding of what school was about and no preschool to go to. So she got involved with Save the Children Fund at the time and helped to establish a preschool on Arambi, the name of the the Indigenous or Aboriginal mission in Kara, and found a very nice woman, Mrs. Capps, who was able to run it with the help of a Miss Coe, an Indigenous woman who had lived in Kara for many, many years and the most delightful person, a real mother and a great carer of the community at the mission. And it was, I think, very successful. They were able to learn in their own environment and with people who cared for them, and then it made their transition into the mainstream schools much better. So there is, you know, there is quite a lot, I think, that could be said and talked about with the Aboriginal connections in Kara, and possibly not enough has been written or spoken about that yet. Yeah.
Which part? Like we've talked to one of the co's.
Great. Which Isabel? One? Isabel, yes.
The young Isabel.
Yes, okay. Yes.
And she's going to talk. We're going to interview her.
Great. So that is good. Yeah.
We also interviewed Robin
Coffey. Yes.
So we have two Aboriginal voices.
Good.
On it, which is great.
On the app?
On the app.
Great. Also, you will be able to incorporate that.